Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
They got to be some tight asses, don't you think?
Oh, they take it very seriously.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Lou Danny, a couple days early here. And, you know, we love your thoughts on hockey, but we need to get your thoughts, Lou, on Vikings, Saints, and the Minneapolis Miracle, Seven Heaven, whatever we want to call it. Where were you watching? What are your thoughts?
I was watching here down in South Florida. And I, you know, it's unbelievable, but I still feel that everything's aligned, that this is their year. So I'm not surprised that they found a way to win. I'm surprised at how they won, but not that they won. I really think that this is the year. Everything just seems to be coming together.
Did you come close to not being able to watch the end there?
No. In fact, Glenn Mason and I, we were together here watching. We were having dinner at my place and watching it, and we, you know, we just, when they got the ball back, we said there's enough time to kick a field goal, not thinking a touchdown, but We just thought that somehow something was going to happen.
If this had been your team, could you have watched it?
Probably not. No, I would have been walking somewhere out in the concourse.
Going to a movie or something like you did in Toronto?
Yeah, go to a movie. I don't know if anything was close enough to be open. Take off in the fourth quarter, go to a movie.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like, even the great teams, and who knows what happens here if the Vikings go on to win a Super Bowl, but you need luck sometimes. And football has a bunch of examples where the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick dynasty needed the tuck rule play in a blizzard in New England 15, 17 years ago. The Steelers with the immaculate reception. Now, they went on 2 years later to win the Super Bowl after that. But sometimes even great teams just need something to bounce your way or a defensive player to get out of position, and then that's when you take advantage.
And that's what happens. That's why you play till the end. You never know what crazy thing might happen. And over the years, there's been a lot of crazy things, but as I said after this one, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be another 100 years. I don't think we're going to see something like that. All I know is I'm happy I'm not that poor defensive back having to spend the rest of my life thinking about that play.
How about that kid?
Oh, I just feel
flew right by the play.
Yeah, I mean it was a bonehead play, but boy, you just got to feel sorry for him, even though you want it to happen somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want anybody to make a dumb play. You wanted a good play with.
Right.
You know, and I feel sorry for them. But we're the recipients, and, you know, for me it's just reward for that 2009 game. I'm still, that probably upset me as much as any game that I can remember in sports, and I really thought that we were going to win that and win the Super Bowl. And I was so upset about that one. I just think that this is a little payback.
Hey, Lou, as a guy who played sports professionally for a while, tell me this. When do you sort of identify as a player when a season is special? I mean, because this Vikings team is very good. I don't sell them short, but they've also had fortune, health, and things like that. As a player, when do you start to get a feel for this isn't just a good year, this could be a special year?
Well, when you're getting late in the year and the things seem to be breaking for you and against the people that you might fear or think that might beat you, and I'm going back saying that, like this year, for instance, that there are lack of real meaningful injuries on the defense, and yet you're looking at some of the other teams like Philadelphia losing their quarterback and some of the other guys coming up short or making dumb plays in the NFC, and you start thinking maybe, just maybe, things are starting to align for us to have things break right, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that the Vikings were so solid all year long, but yet not having any real pitfalls that the others had. And even the fact that, it's hard to say now, but you go back when Sam Bradford gets hurt and Keenan comes in, and you think that the Vikings really got a lot of problem because now who's going to be quarterback and how's this going to work? And so how long before Bridgewater or Bradford come back? And you keep thinking that for 3 or 4 weeks and looking for weaknesses in case, and yet he doesn't show any. And after a while, you say, you know what? Maybe this guy's going to be the guy.
Yeah, you know, we actually played a clip yesterday from John Gruden's quarterback camp series that he's been doing for, I don't know, at least going back to 2012 or 2011. And he had Case Keenum, who was likely to be undrafted and wound up being undrafted. And he told him in the clip we played yesterday He said, I bet you can't even name the top three quarterbacks drafted 3 years ago. And he's in cases like, I mean, Sam Bradford was one of them. He goes, yeah, it doesn't matter. And then he showed him clips of Tony Romo from Eastern Illinois. Was it Eastern Illinois, I think, Romo?
Yeah.
And how this guy went undrafted. And Lou, I think whether it's football or other sports, the ability to pinpoint guys who might not be physical titans, who aren't going to be first-round picks because they're just not physical blue chippers, but they've got that extra thing mentally, leadership, whatever it is, to be able to pinpoint that, I think might be the hardest thing for a GM to do, football and quarterbacks especially.
I agree, and it is something. I told that to my grandson, Vinny Lettieri, who wasn't drafted. And my daughter was very upset. He was upset. I said, this is the best thing that ever happened to you. He said, how could you say that? I said, if you're not a first round, that means they own your rights and you could be negotiating from a different financial position. I said, you're going to do well. You got the ability, and then you're going to have other people. Now everybody's going to want to talk to you, and you're going to get maximum dollars.
Yep.
That's exactly what happens. You know, and it's a break. And when you take a look at Keenum, though, he led everybody, all the college, everybody in passing, and yet wasn't drafted in football. And I think that was seven rounds at that time. And to think that a quarterback leading in all statistics, it doesn't always work out. Once in the sixth round, I took a kid from the Sioux who was really a good scorer. He had over 60 goals. And we got to the sixth round, and we had somebody else on the list. I said, you know what? Sometimes we got to take a flyer for somebody that scored a lot and no one's drafted, because he wasn't a great skater, but he was a great scorer. And it didn't work out. He played in the American League. That was it. But sometimes when guys got those kind of statistics, as a general manager, and you're in a later round, I think you got to take a flyer, because you never know if that person is going to be able to adjust, play up. In other words, play at that level at another level.
Right. And sometimes guys, you know, come in the league too small, and they're young, and they struggle, Lou, and then they mature and become good players. I mean, Wes Walls, right? Wes Walls was a guy who bounced around.
I'll give you one better than that. How about Martin St. Louis?
Yeah.
When he got cut out of Calgary and he's in the minors. And I'll never forget that, because yep. I was doing business with a guy from St. John in New Brunswick, and he's a hockey nut. And he said to me, Louie, we got this kid here you will not believe. And, you know, I'm in the financial business then. And he says, Martin St. Louis, they cut him out of Calgary. I can't believe they cut him. This guy, he can play. I'm telling you, he can play. And sure enough, he ends up in Tampa, and he's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Louis, so bye weeks, your thoughts now, because the Wild lost to the Canucks on Sunday in OT and now don't play again until Saturday night.
Usually I hate them. I can't stand it. And the fact that the Wild won 6 out of 8 points, you think maybe that might, be a bad thing for them. But this time I think it's a good thing. I'm saying it's a good thing because it gives Nino Niederreiter time to get back, and he really missed Niederreiter.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I don't like the way they lost in that game against Vancouver. They should have won 3 times in the overtime. Markstrom makes great saves, and then you get a shot coming across the middle there that goes in, and they lose. And just before the overtime, look at the 2 chances they had late in the third period before Tampa ties it up, and then Tampa sort of takes over. I mean, not Tampa.
Vancouver.
I got Vancouver, you. But they take over for the last 3 minutes. So I think that mentally it might be a good break for them, and it certainly is physically for Niederreiter. So I'm happy about it. I hate these breaks in the season. I think it's the dumbest thing ever been done in sports, was for the Players Association to take 4 days off to allow a 3-3 in the All-Star game. You still got to play the same amount of games in the same amount of calendar time.
Yes.
Which means you're compressing the games into less days, which means you play more back-to-backs, more 4 and 5 nights. More New York Rangers, I think it's New York, one of these teams is playing every second day, or Boston Bruins, every second day from now till the end of March. And that's ludicrous.
Yep.
Because, first of all, somebody can get hurt, and they usually do. Somebody's going to get hurt because of the compressed schedule and the intensity of schedule and the travel and everything else. Secondly, it also cheats the fans because guys are more tired. Yeah, how many times lately you've been finding teams say, oh, we didn't have our legs in the first period, or we didn't have our legs tonight. That's what happens when you get these kind of schedules. And if I was a player rep at the time, I'd have voted against it. I think that, you know, sure, it's nice to have a few days off. Everybody likes a few days off. But not when you can't change the schedule. You can't change the amount of weeks in the league, and you still have to play the same amount of games. So you got to pay for it one way or the other.
Here's what I don't get, Louis. You've got these breaks now, which I think started last week for some teams, and then
yeah, All-Star.
The All-Star break.
Yeah, so if, how do you like that?
If you're gonna do, but if you're going to do this, which I'm with you, I don't like. But if you're going to do this, why do you couple this with the All-Star break? Which, by the way, the majority of players in the league take the All-Star break off.
Yeah, that's right. You know what's going to happen, and I'm not, you know, I'm not sure it's going to happen. But I wouldn't doubt if the Players Association found out a way to have that this break taken away from them. They're saying, well, we gave this back for that, just to get rid of it without admitting a mistake. Because this is the dumbest, and I've said it over and over, the dumbest thing I've ever seen done by an association of professional sports.
Yeah. I think the hockey season is crazy long. It's 2 months of playoffs.
Yeah.
It's an extra month longer, the regular season, although the NBA did push back a little bit into October. The problem is, if you were to go from like 82 to 65 games, you'd have to find a way to convince the owners you could make that up in revenue by either raising ticket prices or something. I mean, is there a compromise ever to be made there, do you think?
Hey, I got to tell you, Phil, I don't think you got to convince the owners. You'd have to convince the players, because you remember 50% of the revenue still goes to the players. The owners basically are going to make what they make. They're not going to make that much more by compressing the schedule. I mean, lose that much less by compressing the schedule.
Yeah.
It's the players who's gonna make less. You know, you take off 10%, just say 10% of the games. So if they're making $2 million, they lose $200,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're not gonna get it done. The owners, I think you could get that done with the owner level, because they can find a way. And by the way, remember, they also got that, frees up some dates for them to put concerts, et cetera, in. So they would be more amenable to it, I guarantee you, than the players.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, so preseason starts in mid-September. So camp starts, let's say, September 1st, you're basically back in, all right? If you make a playoff run into June, you're only really getting 2, maybe 3 full months off, but you're also working out in the offseason. So I could see, if you're a deep playoff run team, why the bye week would be appealing, you know, in concept, just because the season is so... And it's not like you're out there... You know, not to make fun of my baseball player friends, but, you know, you're a starting pitcher. It's not exactly grueling the other 4 days of the week. In the NHL, you're skating your ass off for 20, 25 minutes of ice time, 82 games postseason, preseason.
Yeah, and you're going to have to do it if you don't shorten the schedule. You're still going to have to do it with that bye week. You're going to have to do it in less days,
yeah,
which is tougher. And by the way, speaking of that, that's why I always say, when you're talking about dealing for players when they're at a later age, take a look at how many times they've played longer schedules. In other words, gone into deep into playoffs, or played in world championship teams or World Cup teams, and add that into their age group. And you know, some of these guys have played an extra 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
Other players and the amount of games. And so when you say, "Oh, he's 34," well, you know what? Hockey wise, he might be 36. In other words, he's really taking a toll.
Like a dog. International hockey play, Louis. For current professionals, drives me nuts too, because it's like, do you really want a guy who's just played an entire year, one, risk being hurt, but two, playing more games? I mean, that World Cup last year, I get it that fans like it and it might be considered to be cool, but I don't want Zach Parise starting playing in late July. I just don't want that.
Well, you know, that really wasn't as big a hit as they expected it to be. And with the Olympics before that, previously, and to add that into it, that was ludicrous. Why it was started? It was started in 19, and I played on the first team, and I managed the next three. It was supposed to be every 4 years. We started in 1976, and that was in lieu of the Olympics, to show the best teams in the world playing each other, to allow the fans to have an Olympic-flavored tournament without it being in the middle of the season, the Olympics. And it worked really well. And we went right down to 87 or 91 was the last. And then they did away with it, and then it came back in 96, if you remember, with
US won
that tournament, right?
Yep.
So if they just kept it to that every 4 years, it'd be worthwhile. Because like you're saying, you expose guys to injury, you make the season longer, and it does affect the competitive balance in the league if some of the players get injured and aren't able to play for a while.
Yeah. Where are you going to watch the Eagles-Vikings game?
I'm going to be watching it in Minneapolis. I'm going to be sitting on my couch taking it all in, and Vikings are going to win. I'm not even concerned about that as much as I was concerned about the Rams game.
Yeah. Oh, that's the Saints, yeah.
I mean the Saints.
Yeah, then the Patriots, maybe.
The Rams. You know, I was, even though they got beat, I was more worried about the Rams than the Saints.
Only you would concern yourself with the Rams, Louie, against the Vikings when they didn't even play.
I know. But, I, like I said, I think everything's aligned, and I'm very, very happy. And the other team I was concerned about is Pittsburgh. They're not in it.
Yeah, they're gone now.
Although
so.
Jacksonville, that defense is, but it's Blake Bortles. Come on, at some point.
Yeah,
at some
Blake
point.
Blake Bortles, please.
Louie, the Patriots. The Patriots are the team, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're
yeah.
the team to be concerned
That's
about.
That's going to be fun.
But the good part about it is we, you know, if it's the Patriots against the Vikings, you're not going to have a lot of New England fans in the crowd because they've been to so many Super Bowls. They won't have the, they won't be driven like a team like Pittsburgh if they made it. They travel so well and they'd find ways to, they'd go and stub up and pay whatever it costs to
come. And Jacksonville only has about 12 fans, so
yeah,
they're not going
right.
to pack out.
Yeah. If those, if that 12 group of people want to come, we'll give them good seats because they can watch their team getting shut out.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, I like it, Louie. Thank you.
Bye, Lou.
Okay, guys.
Enjoy.
Lou Nanny down in South Florida sweating out the Vikings.
I love the fact he was sweating the Rams. That's so Louie.
Okay, we were talking about identifying, in that Case Keenum conversation, identifying those players who might not physically look like NFL players or NHL players. I'm going to do a little comparison for you when we come back regarding Case Keenum.
Mackie and Judd now continue.
Now back to more sports than you can handle.
Mackie and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Keenum steps into it. Pass is caught. Diggs! Sideline! Touchdown! Unbelievable! Vikings win it!
I think y'all worry too much about stats, to be honest with you. I mean, guys go out and play, and they play, and they don't care if it's the game-winning drive in the fourth quarter or this guy kicked the field goal in the fourth quarter. They just play, and you know, that's what Case has done all year long. He's a battler, a fighter.
He is all those things. I feel like I've personally gone through multiple stages of Case Keenum acceptance since he took the job in, like, whatever, week two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first stage, and I'm sure a lot of people have their version of the different stages of Case Keenum acceptance. We have a caller who calls in from Pennsylvania every week on Ventline who saw five snaps and was all in, calling in from week three. Two, mm-hmm. Eye of the Tiger, Bob in Pennsylvania. So every time he calls in, we play Eye of the Tiger by a survivor from Rocky III. Like, my first stage was, okay, just don't screw up the couple games you're going to play. Bradford will be back at some point. And then Bridgewater, just don't crash the car. He didn't. And then, okay, he's doing more than just not crashing the car. He's actually been pretty good in these 4 to 5 games as you get into October. But it's not sustainable was phase two. I mean, it can't keep up for the rest of the season. Look at the guy's career. He's been 5 years crappy, mediocre, and look at the Rams and look at the Texans. And now, if you had to ask me right now today, with that playoff game as evidence, and even though he was bad in the first half and bad in the third quarter, the way he bounced back and made big boy throws down the stretch,
yep.
If I had to make a gun to the head decision right now, I would franchise tag him for like $23 million. Because now Pat Shurmur goes to the Giants. That's what the steam is.
Yeah.
Which means Case Keenum is not going to be an option to follow Pat Shurmur. They already have Eli Manning under contract, and they're probably going to draft a quarterback with the number 2 overall pick.
Mm-hmm.
If Shurmur had gone to Arizona, and they don't have anybody, and they're not going to be able to draft one of the top 4 quarterbacks, mm-hmm. unless they trade way up, and I don't know if they have the ammo to, it made more sense to sign a Case Keenum, bring him down to Arizona. So now I'm thinking, let's give him $23, $24 million on that franchise tag, see what happens next season, and he can't be too disappointed. He'll have made more money in 1 year than he's made in his whole career to this point, maybe double, right?
Yeah. In my mind, Case Keenum has done a magnificent job of taking over the ship and guiding it. To consider that to be a franchise QB, in my opinion, is off. He's not. But he has done a very good job. He's well-liked. He takes some chances. He makes some dumb mistakes, but he also can make big plays. The fact that he's so good at scrambling is a huge asset, I think, to him. But when you look at what he's done I think what you have to understand about this team, and offensively especially, is it's the totality of this offense. It's the fact that he's done a very nice job, but he also has a run game, which helps. Offensive line, much improved. And he's got two receivers who are very, very, very good. And good for him in that he's made the most of that opportunity. But I think if you're trying to say, well, that's just our guy, you're missing the point about this offense, which is this offense has a lot of components that work well together.
So let me see. You just described using undrafted, scrambler, underdog, great wide receivers, you know, with his new team. I present to you Anthony Romo, early Dallas Cowboys tenure.
Good broadcaster.
The best next to Chris Collinsworth in the NFL. So Tony Romo, I just did some digging on this during the break. Also undrafted. It's pretty rare to have an undrafted quarterback become a multi-year franchise starting guy. It just in the last 20 years, I think it's Tony Romo and I mean Brady was drafted. Russell Wilson was drafted. They went later, but that's about it. It's Tony Romo. There might be another guy out there that went undrafted. So Case Keenum would be in very uncharted territory if he went from undrafted. Now, Case Keenum also threw for more passing yards than any quarterback in college football history. So he has a little bit more as far as credentials in college. Tony Romo, age 29 with the Cowboys. He had been a starter for a few years by then. Case Keenum has been a sporadic starter, now finally into a good spot. Early in Tony Romo's career, he had Terrell Owens with the Cowboys. Remember when Terrell Owens was crying at
that? That's my quarterback.
That's my quarterback, man.
I remember well.
So age 29, Tony Romo.
Yep.
Almost identical numbers-wise to age 29, Case Keenum. 63% passing versus Case, 67%. A 97.6 passer rating. Case Keenum slightly higher, 98.3.
Mm-hmm.
How about QBR, ESPN's total QBR?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Romo, 68.5. Case Keenum, 71.3.
Wow.
26 touchdowns, 9 picks for Romo, age 29. 22 touchdowns, 7 picks. If you put the other two games out there for Keenum that he didn't start, maybe it's 25 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. 280 yards per game. Romo, they threw more often, I believe, if I could do the math on these numbers. Keenum more like 240 yards a year. But my point is, there are some parallels to be drawn. Now, Romo did it for a decade. And now on the flip side, Case Keenum just pulled off a play that Dallas Cowboys fans wanted Romo to pull off in the playoffs for 10 years, and he couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or at the end of the regular season when they're playing the Giants for a chance to go to the playoffs, and he just couldn't come up with those clutch late season December, January throws. And Case Keenum already did that in a big playoff game. So the parallels between Keenum and Romo are pretty interesting, but I'd still rather wait and see, him before I crown him a top 10 quarterback money-wise.
Yes, and I honestly think now that there's certainly been discussions about who's going to be the quarterback in 2018 for this team, but I really think that this team is going to wait and see. And I found it amusing on Sunday the fact that that Bradford being backup for that game. There were a ton of tweets I saw saying, well, this clearly means nothing to me. It means absolutely nothing. Bradford's played in meaningful games more recently than Teddy has. He had played against the Saints. That move in and of itself made sense to me. But this whole notion that this is starting to sort itself out, I disagree with. I think this team is 100% committed to trying to wait and see how things unfold here. And don't forget, too, this is very important for Case's sake here. When it comes to Keenum, if that game ends Sunday with the safety waiting out Diggs, our conversation about him today is entirely different.
Yeah, I think
is fun and it's cool to watch.
You're right.
And it's special. And I get all that. But if we sat there on Monday with a Vikings loss, if the safety had just tackled Diggs, our conversation is about the throw. It's about the first three quarters of play. It is entirely different. So to take that one play and now say, okay, that defines things, it doesn't.
But it's a big piece to the puzzle, because let's say Diggs gets tackled, but he gets out of bounds. And he was not very close. He was kind of close to the sideline, but if you look at it, he would have had to stretch.
Was in the press box.
Yeah. And they line up for a 50-yard field goal or a 52-yard field goal, and Kai Forbath knocks it home like he did a minute and a half earlier of game clock.
Mm-hmm.
We are still praising Case Keenum for, wow, the guy took One timeout, 25 seconds, made a couple big boy throws, put the Vikings in field goal range. I don't think we can dismiss it just because there was some luck
involved. Dismiss it. I'm just saying that one play now completely takes us from one end of the discussion spectrum to the other side of that. And my point being is to me that this is still remains a work in progress. If you're the Vikings, to sort of see how things unfold.
Yeah, he's not perfect. He definitely played subpar football in the first half, but you want that guy to bounce back. You don't want him to turtle and then turn it into five interceptions like a Jake Delhomme, or we've seen that, you know, Brian Hoyer. It happens with some of these non-elite quarterbacks. So let's come back. Dave Harrigan's got some stuff we should know about. What are you going to throw at us here next, David?
Fireworks all over the NBA last night. We'll get into the details on that, as well as an Anchorman showing up down under, and the Vikings with their victory ticked off the wrong person.
Uh-oh.
The Mackey and Judd Show rolls on,
finally,
on 1500 ESPN.
And stuff you should know about is sponsored by Think About Your Eyes. Seeing is a gift that needs protecting with yearly eye exams. Find a doctor near you at thinkaboutyoureyes.com and make an appointment today.
In sports, there's a lot of stuff you should simply be aware of.
There was stuff going on that no one talked about.
That's pretty heady stuff.
Let me show you some stuff.
I don't do that stuff no more.
This stuff can give you brain damage.
And then there's the stuff you should know about.
Lots of great stuff.
This is the fun stuff.
I love this stuff.
Good stuff.
Man, this stuff's good.
This is that kind of stuff.
I want to check that stuff out.
Mackey and Judd now continues.
This is very serious stuff we're talking about here.
With stuff you should know about.
All right, David Harrigan, lots of good stuff today.
Man, we're all so happy about what happened Sunday, obviously, with the Stephon Diggs catch and run, 61 yards, touchdown. Everybody seems happy around here, but there's one person that isn't happy. I'm not talking about Saints fans in general. Obviously, they're not happy. It's the man you go to for all your first takery.
One of the reasons I'm looking forward to the Super Bowl is because I was looking forward to a potential Big Ben or Tom Brady versus Drew Brees. That's what I wanted to see. And now I'm on the verge of potentially seeing Blake Bortles against Nick Foles or Case Keenum. Good luck with that, NFL. Good luck with that one.
Yeah. So that's Super Bowl.
Stephen A.
Yeah, I mean, he's representing kind of the national viewpoint outside of the fan bases that are still alive. And if you have no horse in the race, you're probably sick of Tom Brady. But, you know, you'd watch Tom Brady against a Drew Brees. A Blake Bortles versus either of these two teams matchup would be a huge buzzkill nationally. I get that. Totally get that.
That's a week of selling defense, boys. Jacksonville, Minnesota. 2 weeks of we're selling defense.
Yeah.
The quarterbacks aren't that good, but the defense is.
Make those quarterbacks inside out. It'll be unbelievable. Let's just get to the confirmation that I'm sure you guys have seen via at least photographic evidence. So what we were talking about yesterday, the speculation, the rumors. Yeah, it's all true. Skull chant. Sean Payton. Yep, Sean
Payton. He confirmed it, by the way. I just saw this tweet. He's doing a press conference right now. Okay. Josh Katzenstein, who covers the Saints. Sean Payton on doing the skull clap late versus the Vikings. Quote, "It was good playoff fun," he said.
I agree.
Good playoff fun.
You know what? I think he's a first-class jerk. I don't think he's a very good coach, personally. A lot of people disagree with me. I think he's probably a brilliant offensive guy, but I don't think he's a very good coach. I think it's hilarious
that he was.
I mean, funny.
He's a great offensive mastermind, but he's had five defensive coordinators and 11. He can't figure out the other half of football.
He's a great coordinator.
Thing.
That's what you're telling me.
What I love about the whole thing is if a player had done it, then the coach would be like, "Well, that's not acceptable. We shouldn't have that." And here you got your jackass coach doing it though. And plus, it's really bad luck. I'm sorry. I believe in karma.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Payton has so much bad karma going for him, and he deserves every bit of it. Every bit of it.
You and Star have.
I don't like him. I don't like him at all.
Huge negative opinion on Sean Payton.
He's a jackass. Yeah, he's a first class jerk.
All right, let's talk about the NBA. Let's talk about people getting upset at people. There was the big one, but we're going to start with the slightly smaller one. This was Ben Simmons of the 76ers, Kyle Lowry of the Toronto Raptors getting into it a little last night. They got a little chippy on the court, but nothing bad. But both of them got tossed after doing just too much jawing at each other. Just 6.5 seconds left in the game. So game basically over, and you see Ben Simmons give the, hey, point to the back. How about we meet in the hallway kind of thing and settle this? The rumors are they did. Rumors are there was an altercation, perhaps not too serious, but they had to be separated and shown to their respective locker rooms. They both deny it. They both say, no, that's crazy. Nothing happened. But the Sixers apparently, for what it's worth, post-game availability for the players, typically held in the locker room as it always is, was held in the conference room due to what they said was a leak in the locker room.
Oh, a leak.
Yeah, huh. There was a leak. So you can't go in there.
Like a water main break there.
Yeah,
that's horrible tough. Things. Yeah, it's just there's a puddle, actually.
Yeah.
That's an old arena, so other pipes.
So they did the recess thing, huh?
Yes.
Meet me out back.
Meet me in the back. By the pine school grounds.
By the pine tree.
NBA fights are so lame, too. It's all tough talk and very few actual meaningful punches being thrown. I bet you it's the same way behind closed doors.
It's funny you bring that up, because we have then the next scuffle. Rockets and Clippers in L.A. CP3, Chris Paul's return to L.A. didn't go well. The game featured Blake Griffin throwing a chicken wing elbow at Mike D'Antoni, Rockets coach. Featured Austin Rivers of the Clippers, who didn't play in the game, just chirping all night from the bench. Rockets weren't too happy about that. So, Adrian Wojnarowski, what happened?
Sources told me after the game, four Rockets players, James Harden, Chris Paul, Gerald Green, and Trevor Ariza, literally breached the Clippers locker room. They were calling for Austin Rivers, Blake Griffin. Security got to them before there was any contact. The Clipper players saw them come in, I was told. They jumped up to their feet, but there was no physical confrontation.
And apparently they breached the locker room via some back hallway that Chris Paul knew about, having played there, while the Rockets center, Clint Capella, was banging on the front door of the locker room of the Clippers to apparently distract them or catch their attention while those guys came in the back. But what you mentioned, Phil, about NBA players being all talk and no fisticuffs, I think that's exactly what Chuck and Shaq were laughing about on Inside the NBA.
I played in the NBA for 16 years, and I've been on TV for 18 years. It's the first time I ever heard police presence. They got a police presence? Are you kidding me? Wait, come on, man.
Numerous social media reports that LAPD was called.
LAPD was called. See, these two, man.
Dude, that's, yeah. Oh,
that's great.
What is it? So what's with all, is Chris Paul just that much of a salty SOB that he just creates that much? They clearly hated him when he played there. I think that those are stories about that all the time. Like DeAndre Jordan tried to leave a couple times and I don't know.
He was a State Farm guy, right? Jordan? Didn't he appear in all of Paul's commercials until now?
They had the
and
Hoopers.
And it's now Harden and Ariza?
They had the Hoopers series.
So go back to the chicken wing elbow that Griffin threw at D'Antoni, is that right?
Yes.
So that was like during, he just like moseyed over towards the bench?
It was running down the court and D'Antoni was standing up right on the sideline and apparently Griffin, kind of tossed to him. Didn't really connect hard, but
this guy's in fifth grade or something?
Yes.
My God.
Yes. Yes, they are.
That's a great story.
Roger Federer won his first round match of the Australian Open, was being interviewed on the court by John McEnroe, and then somebody else came to join the interview process.
Tonight you seemed like a gazelle out there on the court. Would you describe your game as a silky gazelle?
Maybe not. A gazelle. Don't they get eaten at the end?
Not if they're fast enough. Now there's a rumor in the men's locker room that you love coming to play down here in Melbourne, and your secret to fitness is you only eat wombat meat. Is that true?
That is untrue.
Have you ever tasted wombat meat?
I have not. Should I?
It is delicious.
Wait, who is the... I missed something. Who was the other guy that came in?
Will Ferrell.
Oh.
Who was doing the...
Did you catch that? Wasn't John McEnroe?
I didn't know it was Will Ferrell.
Oh. Yes, that was Ron Burgundy himself.
Wow, awesome. That's hilarious, as he would say. I see what you did there. Anchorman. Okay.
You got it. All right.
Judd, did you know that was Will Ferrell?
Not until now.
Okay.
Not until today.
I got duped.
I completely missed it.
You don't recognize the voice?
Play it again.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tonight you seemed like a gazelle out there on the court.
You don't recognize
was
the voice.
Was the first question John McEnroe or was the whole thing?
It's all Will Ferrell. But I picked up on the fact that that didn't sound like McEnroe's voice to me, but I did not pick up on the fact it was Will Ferrell.
The whole time I was listening as if it was John McEnroe, and I was like, is he like, is that an accent? What is that? But now, okay, it all makes sense.
Wombat.
Whatever, I don't even know if I can do this anymore. Oh, you know what? Let's just get to the biggest news of the week, the biggest news of the last 2 weeks, the biggest news of the last month. It's official. She confirmed it. Danica and Eric.
I saw this.
It's official.
So she goes.
It's
from
happened. There's Bears, photos. It's great.
She goes from Bears fan now because she grew up there to Packers fan.
Yeah,
I guess,
she's going
to
cheer for the Packers now that she's with Eric.
Did you guys see? I think it was the Chicago Tribune put out a headline yesterday. At least I saw this on Twitter that. I'm going to paraphrase. Danica Patrick confirms she's dating brother of Bachelorette star Jordan.
Yes, I did see that.
That's
that
a
was
good line.
Pretty good. I don't know. How long do you think that lasts? If I set the over-under at, well, how long until next football season? So let's say over-under 10 months.
Under.
Under?
Under.
You think they're done by week one?
I say 6 months.
So once they get into...
Yeah.
Like OTAs and stuff.
I say under.
No, I disagree.
Mandatory minicamp. He's going to say take a hike.
No. They've both been willing to stick it out for the long term. She was dating the other driver for like 5 years. He was with Olivia for two or three, right?
Yeah, they were together.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're both at that age, kind of mid-30s, where maybe they're looking to settle down and merge their athletic dynasty genes together and create more superior children.
Super babies?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying, Phil?
No, Judd?
I'm just saying 6 months. That's all. Under.
All right.
Under 10. That's all I'm going to say.
We have a pecking order in 15 minutes to contextualize the greatness of the Stefon Diggs 7 Heaven play. Mackey and Judd.
Phil Mackey, Judd Zolgad.
The most meaningless exercise in sports media.
Mackey and Judd on 1500 ESPN.
Join 1500 ESPN at Menards in Brooklyn Park. They'll be there this Friday. That would be the 1500 ESPN promo team will be there from 4 to 6 Friday with a chance to win station prizes. More details at 1500ESPN.com. Keyword events.
Both teams have really good defenses, number one. And, number two, I think, I can't speak for Foles right now because I haven't watched enough on him, but our guys play great all year long, and he's played, I don't know what his record is, 13-1 or something like that, so he's played good. But I think the thing that both the teams have, they both have good teams. You know, they have good offensive line. We have good offensive line. We have good defense, good receivers. You know, I think it's a credit to Doug Peterson and things he's done there.
What do you think the best, from a national perspective, like Dave, well, we were talking about in the last segment during stuff that like Stephen A. was ranting. He wanted Drew Brees and either Big Ben and Peyton or and Tom Brady.
Right.
And if the Vikings weren't in the playoff hunt,
mm-hmm.
I would have said the same thing. If that were the... Let's say that were the Eagles beating the Saints or something in the NFC Championship game... And it ruined a Drew Brees, Tom Brady matchup. I would have been a little less enthused to watch the Super Bowl too. So I totally get that. What do you think the best? I think it's Vikings Patriots. I think that's the best possible national storyline.
Yeah,
home Super Bowl.
I think selling Jacksonville is very difficult.
It's impossible.
Because there's no storyline. I mean, you can say defense, but people are going to say, so what? They have Blake Bortles.
Yeah.
I think Jacksonville is a complete nightmare. I think the Patriots are great. And I think you can easily sell Patriots going for another title with Brady at, 40 now, going against the home team as well. I mean, the Vikings offer you nationally so many potential storylines.
Case Keenum is a more intriguing figure
Case
than Nick
Keenum.
Foles. Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, I would say Philadelphia and the Patriots is not a complete disaster. I would say the Vikings and Patriots is most attractive, and God help the AFC if they're trying to sell Jacksonville.
Not to mention everybody and their mother has seen the play from Sunday 17 times since then. That's going to be played a million times between that 2 weeks.
Yep.
And Case Keenum has now seen it as a quarterback that, holy crap, this guy might be really good. This is a chance at redemption versus what do 9 out of 10 football fans think about Nick Foles?
Yeah, I think most people or don't think about him at best, right?
Yeah, you've had 14 and a half games of Case Keenum to say, wow, he's really good. Yep.
And Pete, I think the majority of neutral fans are rooting against the Patriots. And as far as like a team that's more fun to latch onto if you don't have a horse in the race, the home Super Bowl team, the Case Keenum factor that he's been doing it all year long and he's going to be an MVP candidate, the miracle play that Dave mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's
Mike Zimmer.
He's kind of a likable figure, and there's going to be one of the big storylines if they get by the Eagles will be Mike Zimmer since the death of his wife 10 years ago, as far as like stories that are going to get drummed back up.
Well, and think about this too. I mean, if you go back through his past, he interviewed for and was passed over by at least five teams, including Cleveland.
I think Tennessee was one too.
And Tennessee was one. And they'll also go back to the story where he was up after the 2013 season, he was up for the Vikings job and Titans job. And the Titans called him back and he was in the air and he was informed they've just hired a coach. And so he said, I'm done. And he actually
Ken Whisenhunt.
Yes. But at that point, Zimmer said, I'm done, and was going to call the Vikings and say, I'm done there too. Just forget about it.
Yeah.
And two people basically said, you can't do that. Don't be a fool. So that's a great story.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who was, 58 at the time, who was basically contemplating saying, I am a defensive coordinator. That's my lot in life. I'm not ever going to get this head coaching job, and I've been passed over by five or six teams, including the Cleveland Browns.
Yes, and of course the fact that I know the Eagles haven't won a Super Bowl or a championship in the Super Bowl era, but I think all of those storylines, and then add to it, the Vikings have never won a Super Bowl, and the Patriots are the greatest dynasty in the history of the Super Bowl era, even maybe greater than the Joe Montana, San Francisco 49ers. Yeah, that would be the most appealing matchup. 651-646-8255. Nick, you're on the show. What's going on?
Gentlemen, how are you?
Yeah, we're enjoying this week. I'm sure the fans are as well.
All right, so before I get to my football question about the quarterbacks, Bill, have you been watching the last couple of days' news about Tiger Woods secretly working out with Butch Harmon and Butch's brother Claude?
No.
How awesome Tiger looks and how he's like, he's going to win this year, and he's going to contend at Augusta.
Really?
It's happening.
Interesting. Look at Judd just snickering over there. That's fine. You're not invited, Judd.
No, I'm not coming either.
Bandwagon.
I'm busy. Yes. I'm busy. I can't get on the bandwagon.
Tiger Woods going for his... Let's flash forward to 2022. Tiger Woods going for his fourth straight green jacket.
Why did you do this to poor Mackie? That's my question. All right.
Love it, Nick.
Okay. So I just want to preface this by saying this: none of this take is a slight on Case Keenum at all or what he's done so far this season.
Careful, because if you do that,
you hate Case Keenum and we know it, but go ahead.
Okay, so with what the Vikings, have done with being patient with Teddy Bridgewater and what they've thought of him for the past, couple of years and what they invested in bringing Sam Bradford here, doesn't it kind of feel like Case Keenum is going to kind of be the third guy on their radar to sign? I mean, he's going to, with what he's done, he's probably going to, demand some money. Whether or not he deserves to be paid like a franchise quarterback, we probably all know that doesn't really have what it takes to be a franchise quarterback. He's more of that, Brad Johnson, Trent Dilfer type guy that doesn't really have a strong arm like Bradford does, but he can manage the game and doesn't do anything silly. And it just feels like if Bradford's knee is healthy, he has more of the traits to be, the quote unquote franchise quarterback that a team might need, even though he's a little bit older. It just feels like they're going to keep Teddy, and if Bradford's healthy, they're going to try to reassign him since it won't cost as much, and Case is just going to kind of be left out to dry as a third quarterback regardless of what he's done for the team. Maybe that's completely off base, but it just seems like those two guys with Teddy and Sam for what they've invested are going to be the guys that they go back to bring back.
So that's great questions, and thank you for the Tiger Woods update.
I think
I can always appreciate
golf updates. I think that very much depends on one thing, the next two games, basically.
There's way more meat on this bone off his question. I think he's for sure he's a better football player, quarterback than Trent Dilfer. I don't think he's Trent Dilfer. I mean, Trent Dilfer was literally, hey, we're going to put you in the driver's seat of this car, but the car drives itself, so just don't touch anything.
Yeah.
Case Keenum is more than that. We got a break because we're up against the top of the hour. Let's do two things in the next half hour. Let's do our Stephon Diggs miracle pecking order mm-hmm. in terms of Minnesota sports plays.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's talk more about Case Keenum and where he sort of falls in the various tiers of quarterbacks in the NFL. Mackey and Judd, two more hours to go.